Once upon a time, there was a young woman who was a dancer. And not just any old dancer. Why, she was one of the finest dancers of her generation. In fact, she was already in the big city. She was already working for a ballet company. And slowly but surely, she was making her way to the very top in that company. So that before long, she was playing major roles upon the stage. Before long, people were showering her with compliments. Before long, she had admirers by the dozen. Men would come and cheer her at the end of her performances. They would wait outside her dressing room just hoping to get an autograph from her. Because she was such a marvelous dancer, she was such a beautiful presence on stage that all who saw her would fall in love with her, or worse, simply lose their heads and feel that she was the light of their lives, that they couldn't live without her. She got so many letters of love and adoration from men saying how she was the most wonderful and beautiful woman they'd ever come across, and if only she'd marry them, then, their lives would be complete. And it wasn't very easy for her to keep a level head with all of this. You see, every letter that she received like that, it just gave her a little nudge in the direction of thinking that perhaps, just perhaps, they were right. That she was actually better than any other dancer in the company. And not just that, but more beautiful than any other woman in the city. And not merely that, but somehow better than every other human being on the planet. And although that might seem like a bit of a stretch, those letters, they kept on coming. And every time they did, they would just gently push her towards this seeing herself as better and bigger and more wonderful, more beautiful than any other. And so it wasn't long before she became rather difficult to be around. The other women in the company, they had known her at first as a very nice, friendly, pleasant girl. But now she was becoming arrogant. Now she would refuse to dress in the same dressing room as them and demanded a dressing room all to herself. Now she wouldn't even talk to the chorus girls during the interval. Oh no, that was far too low, beneath her. For now, she was something special. She was a cut above, and she didn't want to mix with inferior dancers. And so it was that she became very lonely, aloof, cut off, in this world of her own where no one could equal her. And of course, the men would still send her letters. They would still gather outside her dressing room. They would still hope to catch a glimpse, to catch an autograph or even a smile. But for her, although in her mind she was becoming greater and greater with every passing day, this seemed at the same time to make her lonelier and lonelier until it seemed like her life had become something cold, something unpleasant, something almost painful. Going out on stage for yet another performance, her heart would slowly sink, knowing that at the end of it, there would be one more man in the crowd who believed that she was a woman beyond all others, who would send her letters and wait outside the hall for her, and she herself would be nudged ever closer and closer to a place where there was but no one else, and she was all alone. Until one day, it was very strange. The performance was all set. The hall was filled with people. All the dancers were warmed up and ready to go on, and she found herself unable to move. It were as if every muscle in her body had suddenly become quite stiff. She could not lift her legs, could not raise her arms. And the director, after examining her for some time, decided that she couldn't go on that night, that some other dancer would have to take her place, and she should take a cab and go home and rest, and maybe she'd be better the next day. Well, as the performance got into its swing, as the young woman who'd taken her place managed to play her part more or less reasonably, the young woman found her muscles slowly loosening, found that she could stand up, found that she could walk away, out of the dressing room, out of the hall, and out into the city. And walking there alone through the city, walking there amongst the strangers, the milling crowds, she felt more alone than she had ever felt in her life. With the performance going on back there in the concert hall, and she herself quite alone. She wandered through the streets, so empty, so lonely, that in time she was just walking along and crying, crying as she walked. Until, before long, she passed by an old alleyway, and she heard something down the end of that alleyway that made her stop at once. Was the sound of an old woman crying, sobbing very, very quietly. And the girl at once, she forgot her own misery. And she looked down the alleyway at this bundle of rags at the very end of it that seemed to be where the old woman was, that was shuddering gently in the shadowy half-light, with the sound of the old woman's crying slowly drifting down the alleyway towards her. And although it was not the sort of thing she commonly did, although she usually would hurry past dark alleyways, this time she could not help but walk down its length, coming closer and closer to where the old woman was. And the closer she came, the more desolate the old woman's sobbing seemed. Desolate. Like all the loneliness in the world was in a cup that she'd just drank, and now she was full of it and unable to cope. The girl couldn't bear to hear another moment, and she put her hands to the old woman's shoulders, or at least to the rags that covered the old woman's shoulders. And very gently she gave a little shake. And she said, excuse me, are you all right? And the old woman,
she just about managed to mouth some words, but
the girl, she couldn't hear them. She said, it's all right, I'm here now. It's all right, are you okay? The old woman, she...
not a case of whether I'm okay, is it you okay?
I'm sorry, said the girl. The old woman was speaking so incoherently she could hardly hear what she was saying. What did you say?
It's not whether I'm okay,
said the old woman.
It's whether you're okay.
Me? Said the girl. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I do, said the old woman. And I wish you'd stop crying.
I don't understand, said the girl. I wasn't crying.
You were?
Said the old woman. And then she remembered, well, yes, she was, but how did you know that?
Because,
said the old woman, as if that one word was enough to explain everything. I don't understand. Who are you? The old woman, for the first time, looked at the girl, revealing her face, throwing aside a veil of rags. And as the girl looked at the old woman, there seemed something strangely familiar about her. But she could not say what it was.
"I'm crying," said the old woman,
"for you." "But you don't know me," said the girl. "This is ridiculous. I've never seen you before." But although the words came out of her mouth, the longer she looked at the old woman, the stranger the feeling that came over her became, that she somehow knew this old woman, knew her very, very well, and yet could not explain where she'd met her before.
"I don't know how you can bear it," said the old woman. "I don't know how you can live with it."
"Live with what?" said the girl.
"All the adulation, all those young men. Oh, it must be awful for you."
The girl gazed at the old woman. She said, "Awful? Well, why would a thing like that be awful?"
"Because of what it does to you," said the old woman,
wiping a few tears from her eyes. Her wrinkled face was quite wet with tears. She must have been sobbing for a long time, thought the girl, but she still didn't understand why.
"Oh, well, I'm glad you found your way to me."
The girl was by now so baffled that she'd stopped even asking questions. She leant her back against the wall there, and for the first time realized that it was really rather cozy there. That old dark alleyway was really quite a nice and friendly place. Although it was a bit gloomy, there was nothing unfriendly about it. The old woman stood aside to reveal that there in the corner there was a little fire, just enough of a fire to be boiling a little black pot. By the side of the fire there was 2 cups of tea, and as she poured the water over the tea, the girl could already smell it. And the two of them sat down there in the shadows, with the whole city bustling and hustling just there at the end of the alleyway, seemingly completely unaware of both of them. The old woman was sipping on her hot tea, quite content now, no longer crying. The girl had felt this strange spell come over her for some time now, of how cozy it felt there, of how warm, of how pleasant. So that when the old woman began to speak her story, the girl simply relaxed into it, allowed the words to just wash over her, allow them to caress her like silk, allow them to wrap her up warm like furs. And so as the old woman spoke, the story seemed to carry the girl deep inside herself, to a place that she'd perhaps visited once, but that had been so long ago she'd all but forgotten about it. And this is the story that the old woman told. Once upon a time, down in the depths of the blue ocean, there was a king. A king, that is, of the fishes. And this king of the fishes was most especially proud, considered himself to be, why, the most powerful, the most elegant, the most beautiful, the swiftest, the most wonderful of all the fishes in all the oceans. But one day, the king of the fishes was swimming close to the surface of the water, and what did he see? But there, coursing through the air, there was a seagull. And in all his life, the king of the fishes had never seen anything so grand as that seagull flying through the air. And he at once went back to his chamberlain and said, "Chamberlain, I saw something today that quite disturbed me. I saw a fish flying above the water and going faster than I could ever imagine going myself. What can I do, Chamberlain?"
"Your Majesty," said the Chamberlain, which of course was a fish, "Your Majesty, I can't imagine what you'd want to do. I mean, birds are birds and fish are fish. This was a bird you saw, a marvellous, magnificent bird for sure, but you, Your Majesty, are not one of them."
"But it could move faster than I ever could," said the king. "Wouldn't it be marvellous to be a bird like that? Couldn't you arrange it for me?"
"Your Majesty, preposterous. I can't imagine a fish flying."
"See to it," said the king. And the chamberlain went away and wondered what to do. And he swam amongst all the other fishes and said that the king had lost his mind, wanted to become a bird. How could such a thing be possible? But there was amongst the king's subjects a very old fish that knew all kinds of secrets, knew secrets of transformation, how to turn one thing into another. And by this fish came forward and told the chamberlain of its secret and magic powers. And before long, the old fish was there before the king and said, "Your Majesty, I can indeed make you move as fast as the bird. I can indeed make you a bird yourself. But it means you must forever let go of being a king."
"But," said the king, "could I not be a king of the birds?"
"No," said the other fish, "you must let go of being a king. For when you are a bird, you will be beginning at the beginning. You will know nothing of what birds do. You will know nothing of flying. In fact, you will need to learn the whole thing yourself. And you will thus be the lowest amongst the birds. But if you so want to become one, then it can be done." The king thought long and hard. He thought how much he treasured being the king of all the fishes. He swam for long hours through the schools where his subjects were. He swam for many miles through the depths of the ocean, knowing that he was the great lord of all he surveyed, that all fishes looked up to him. But still, the memory of that bird flying through the air, oh, it thrilled him so much that in the end he knew he must have that experience. And he returned to the old fish and said, "Very well then, make me a bird, and I shall give up my kingship." "It shall be done," said the old fish. And with a wave of its tail, the magic was done. The king was no longer a king of the fishes, but was rather now a windswept, shivering and shaking white little seagull, standing on a rock that jutted just out of the ocean, just enough to stand upon. And now the ocean waves raged all around, and the seagull was perching desperately on the rock, hoping not to fall into the sea. Because whereas before the sea had been a safe place, why now it was a treacherous place. No, it was the air that was safe now, the air that was home. But the seagull had never flown before. Now, flapping its wings, desperately trying to work out what flight was, it was a wonder the seagull did not go crashing into the water and be drowned forever. But somehow, in a great flurry of wings, somehow in the panic of all that flapping, into the sky it flew. And it must be said that its flight was really quite pathetic. Not very skillful at all, barely just enough to keep above the waves. But it was flying nonetheless. And thus began the seagull's new life. And at first, all the other birds mocked him and laughed at him. How clumsy he was, how poorly he could fly, how he scarcely knew how to catch fish, which, understandably, was not the easiest of tasks for him. But in time, the seagull grew in both strength and confidence, until before long there were no mockers amongst the other birds. And in time, they began to admire him, for he seemed to have a swiftness and a smoothness to his flight. He seemed to flow through the air like no other bird could. Almost like a fish, they would remark. But they wouldn't know quite how close to the truth they were. Days passed and months went by, until after some years the seagull was such a magnificent flyer that amongst all the other birds he was declared the king of the birds. And how proud he was now, how high he could fly, how magnificently he could soar, how they admired him, and whenever they told him so, why, how his pride would inflate, how marvellous he would consider himself. Until one night he was flying through the air amongst the clouds. And as he flew ever higher and higher, he left the clouds far below him. The sea now was just a dark blue sparkle far down below. And as he flew up so high there, his gaze went up to the stars. Oh, how they shone, how magnificent they were, how beautiful. What was he? He who could fly so high and so fast, who was proclaimed the king of the birds by all the rest of them. What was he when compared to that? Those sparkling stars were, why, more grand than he could even dream of becoming. And a great depression came over him. A great depression that he was, after all, not so grand. That king though he may be, those stars were by far outshining him and ever would do so. Until the next day he consulted with his chamberlain, for he had one that was a bird, and said, "Chamberlain, something must be done. I wish to become as magnificent as those stars. Could it not be made so that I could be a star amongst them?" And the chamberlain, quite understandably, was most befuddled by this request, and flew amongst all the other birds, asking if any of them knew of any such magic that could transform a bird into a star. Well, None of the birds had the faintest idea, until, that is, one very old one came forward and said, "I know how it can be done, but mark my words, it will not be easy, and the king shall find the transition from one to the other more difficult than anything he has ever known." The chamberlain said, "You better talk to the king then." And off they flew together to where the king was restlessly flying about. And the chamberlain introduced the old one and told the king that the old one had the answer. But as the old bird spoke of how difficult it would be, of how there would be great obstacles to overcome, of how the king would be utterly changed, the king listened and nodded his head and said, "Yes, yes, yes, I know." But in his heart, he considered that he had started as the lowliest of birds and had become the king. Why, surely, although it may be difficult, although he may start out as a small star, before long he would be the king of the stars, the king of all the stars. Why, that would be something. "Yes, yes, yes," said the king of the birds. "Just do it for me, will you? Cast your magic spell. I'm sure I can handle anything." And so the old bird, who was really possessed of quite extraordinary magic, cast a spell that transformed the king of the birds into a radiant star. There, shining in the firmament, the king found himself all in a flash. Now, things were not at all as he'd expected. He was filled with a fire so raging, so bright that he could not contain it, for that is indeed how a star feels, so full of light and heat that it cannot contain it and must shine and shine and shine so brilliantly that it can be seen for countless miles ahead. For the king, who had been a king of the fishes and a king of the birds, it was all too much. For there, burning and shining in the sky, the king found that being a star was not quite what he'd expected. For every idea of himself that he'd ever held was now burnt away in all of that fire and heat. All the ideas of how grand he was, how marvelous he was, how he was the best and the biggest and the fastest, all of that was just burnt away until all that was left was heat and light. And although the king, who was now a tiny star burning there in the sky, still existed, it was as if all his ideas about who he was had been burnt away. That is, until another star drifted close and spoke very softly, saying, "Who are you? Where have you come from? I've not seen you before. And the tiny little star said, I do not know who I am. I thought I was a fish, and then I thought I was a bird. But now I do not know who I am. And the friendly star who'd floated close said, Ah, let me tell you, you are all heat and all light, and your purpose is to shine and fill the heavens. But, said the little star, what became of my ideas of who I was? I was a king back then. And now, said the friendly star, you are just heat and light. But what should I do? Said the little star. You should shine, like I said. Shine and fill the heavens. And so that is just what the king did. The king, who was now a tiny little star. It shined and shined and filled the heavens. And all the heat and all the light inside was forever bursting outside and shining all around. But that was not quite enough. For the little star felt terribly lonely. Terribly lonely. All that heat and light had burned away all his ideas of being anything marvellous. But he was now just shining in dark, empty space, quite alone. Until one day the friendly star drifted close, and the king, who was now a tiny star, said, Let me go. I want to return. Take me back to the earth. I want to be a fish once more. Let me swim in the oceans. That's what I was made for. And the friendly star smiled and said, If you become a fish once more, you will forget everything you know now. All the heat and all the light, you will forget you ever knew it. And yet, you will long for it more than anything. I guarantee you, it will not be easy to become a fish once more. You will consider you have lost something, but you will not know what it is. You will yearn for that thing, but you will not be able to find it. Unless, of course, you burn with a heat and a light that is similar to that which you burn with now. But how will I do that? Said the little star. Ah, said the friendly star, you will have to remember very, very well. But you just said I'd forget everything. You will, said the friendly star, but not entirely. Well, the king, who was now a little star, was so yearning to go back home that even though he was not sure if he would ever remember, that tiny possibility that he might just was enough to keep him going. Then do it for me, he said. And in that moment, the little star became a fish. But he was a very lowly kind of fish now. A very lowly, humble kind of fish, nothing like the king of all. He was small. He moved not much faster and not much slower than all the others. Indeed, he was the sort of fish that you certainly wouldn't notice. And the king, who had been a bird and then a star and now a fish, was so filled with longing. It was a longing for heat and light. And it was a longing that he could not work out how on earth he could fill. Swimming around in the ocean amongst all the other fish, why, he found himself becoming quite sad, quite lost, quite unable to figure out where the heat and the light might come from. At times, he would be swimming close to the surface of the water and would gaze up and see the night sky and would catch glimpse of a star there. And something inside of him would remember the heat and the light. Oh, but he had no idea what he should do with it. Until one evening, he was swimming there close to the surface when the light of the stars shone upon his scales, his silvery scales, and it reflected there most beautifully. And the strange thing was that when he swam a little deeper, the light of the stars, it came with him. As he swam yet deeper and deeper into the ocean, his scales shone ever more brightly. Until the other fish there, they said, "Look at him. And look how he shines. What sort of a fish are you that shines like that?" And the little fish said, "Oh, I do not know. And I've no idea why I shine. But it's simply that I long for the light and the heat of the stars." "Why," they said, "you're shining like a star yourself." "I am," he said. And as he gazed at his fellow fish, he could see reflected in their eyes something marvelous, something beautiful, as if by his shining, he brought alive inside of them something they most wanted. As if by his sparkling, by his light, he brought alive in them something. And they were smiling. And the more they smiled, the better he felt. "Why, let me shine a little more for you," he said. And he went up to the surface of the water and there allowed the stars to cover him with their light. And once more, he dove down into the depths. And all the other fishes would gather round and gather round, for now he shone brilliantly silver. And every fish that observed him thus felt thrilled, for he shone like a star. And their eyes would sparkle and they would laugh for joy. And the little fish would feel inside of him something that was heat and light and all happiness. And from that moment forth, every night, the fish would swim close to the surface of the water, would catch the light of the stars, and then swim down into the depths, and would sparkle there for all the other fish. And he sparkled not so that he should be made grand amongst them, not so they should admire him, but rather so that he could see their eyes light up, so that he could see the joy inside of them, the happiness they felt, so that he could watch them filling up with love and happiness. The old woman came to the end of her story. Her wrinkled face was just visible there in the shadowy half-light of the alleyway. The fire by now had all but died out. Just a few smoking embers remained. And the girl, who was such a fine ballet dancer, she sat and she listened. and she nodded her head. "I must go now," she said.
"But so soon?" said the old woman. "Well, you haven't heard the next story."
"Oh, I don't need to hear the next," said the girl. "I must go." And with that, she ran back out of the alley. She ran back through the streets. She ran back to the theatre. And there she waited backstage. And as the ballet came to its conclusion, why, there she was, waiting to congratulate the girl that had taken her place. Ah, and she showered her with compliments, told her how beautifully she'd danced, insisted she dance the next night. But the director wouldn't hear of that, insisted that now she was better, she must dance. But the next day, when she came to the theatre, why, she was chatting with all of the other dancers. She was once more amongst them all. And as she chatted with them, as she smiled and paid them compliments, she saw all the other dancers, all the other girls with whom she worked. She saw them lighting up. She saw them glowing with confidence at the compliments she paid to them. For she was considered so fine a dancer that a compliment from her was, well, enough to make you feel good all evening. And that evening, the whole company danced more beautifully than they'd ever danced. And the way she danced was such that she allowed the others to shine, that she didn't gather all the light to herself, but rather shared it amongst all those on stage. And at the end of the performance, with all the adulation and all the applause, why, she insisted that every last one of the dancers came on stage and took a bow, and would take no bow on her own. And in this way, the whole company went from strength to strength, was quite the finest ballet company in the city. And even then, she did not take any of it for herself, but rather sought to share out all the praise amongst everyone there. And from that moment forth, she did not ever again feel the great loneliness that she'd felt. But instead, she felt as if she were a little fish gathering light from the stars and spreading it amongst all those she came near.